there's a lack of social cohesion between the two groups of local South Africans and refugees. So this is not only a presentation about refugees and migrants, but it's also looking at the needs of South Africans. And that is how we came to know and start Africa Unite. It was initiated by the needs of both local South Africans and foreign nationals. Also, in starting up Africa Unite, we're assisted by IDASA. A peer education human rights training program was then developed for the youth. The aim of the program is to provide training and to build human rights communities through the rights of local South Africans, refugees and migrants to promote and protect these rights. So not only that people are educated in them, but they actually also value them and they respect them and they know how to go about protecting these rights. Our realization is that once the youth grasp the concept of human rights, they begin to then implement these rights in their lives, in their families, in their communities, in their schools. We didn't look upon ourselves going to change communities and going in to educate people and saying we have this formula. But the fact that this was developed by the youth themselves, that is what makes this so unique and so valuable. The content of our training covers general introduction to human rights and why human rights education is important, human rights principles, South African Constitution, the Bill of Rights, categories of rights, international and national statute of protecting and promoting human rights. And as you can follow there in your copy, the rest of our training as well, we're also looking at facilitation skills. So this training is looking at equipping the youth holistically, not only in theory and knowing rights, but also for them to be able to go out to the community and be able to teach others and train others. Now, we haven't taken it upon our responsibility to go out ourselves as African Unite, but rather to equip the youth with skills that they can use forever. Our weekend, our training covers is in the process of a weekend. We usually have it at Cook Kadak. Each year we target about 20 to 25 youth from different backgrounds, and including as well local South Africans and refugees. So far, 155 youth peer educators have been trained, both white, colored, black, and refugees. Our achievements so far, and of course we didn't write them all down, there's more to see in our annual report. These are the achievements of the community and the peer educators that we have in various places. Each year, more than 3,000 people have been reached through schools, churches, youth groups, police, old age homes, ex-combatants, and through home affairs. Our workshops are conducted in our local African languages of Xhosa, Afrikaans, English, also including Swahili, Portuguese, French, and Somali, incorporate refugee communities. These are some of the comments that we have gotten from the participants of our training. More of these workshops are needed in our community. We see a lot of them. These workshops must be a part of school curriculum. I never knew that refugees also had rights in South Africa. And unfortunately, that is still a common trend of many South Africans and also foreign nationals, not knowing that refugees actually have rights in South Africa. I know today the difference between migrants and refugees. Today I know the difference between human rights and civil rights. We also found that a lot of people in leadership What can I do for myself? What can we as a group do together? what can we as families do to support each other? And this is how the savings scheme came about. It was through the initiative of the youth themselves to say, but hey, I buy maybe alcohol or cigarettes daily if I'm not working. What else can I do with this money? They came up with the system of saving the free rent a day. Then they can have their community and have that kind of economic development for themselves and their families. Our third program is also change your sports activities. We realize that it's not only through just sitting and dialoguing with people, sitting through dialogue with refugee and local South Africans that social cohesion can be created, but also through cultural differences and celebrating culture and sport. So that's where we targeted having friendly games in the community among rooftop roads, managers, technicians, and leaders, just bringing people together. Where also language was not an issue. Language doesn't have to be an issue if you're playing soccer. And also celebrating the commonalities that we have as well as just South Africans with refugees. We also then have youth and social dialogue. This is a growing activity amongst the community. We are also in partnership with the Nelson Mandela Foundation, who are also doing local dialogue in community. We're bringing about social cohesion amongst South Africans and foreign nationals. You will also see that the Nelson Mandela has developed this booklet called Community Conversations, and they were able to record all the community conversations in 9 provinces. You can look at page 38, Africa United speakers there. Myself and my director will be one of the facilitators of these community conversations. Also, with the youth dialogue, these are some of the topics that we've experienced. The youth want to talk about xenophobia in schools, impact of pornography among youth identity, youth and social integration, youth in the youth South Africa. So just looking at the topics alone, we can already get a sense of the hunger of youth to want to change things in the community, to want to change, take leadership. If you want to build communities, they just need the support from people like ourselves and people like me. We also have a women's forum. And the value of this is that having experienced what women have gone through nationally and internationally, we come very far as women. We have to have women as part of our driving force. This was also initiated by women in local communities themselves. Women of refugees and local South Africans came together. We also have one of our women representatives here, who is the chairperson of the Women's Forum. If you have any questions hereafter, we have people who can answer and explain in more detail what the Women's Forum is all about. But again, it's about sharing ideas, sharing experiences, both pain and good experiences, and coming together as women supporting each other. Some of our achievements through conflict mediation have been in the following areas. The NERN in 2002, I'm sure everyone here can remember, between the community and refugees. Maximum Day, 2007, local businesses and the Somalian traders. We're still experiencing this problem. As I said, it's an ongoing problem that we need to look at as a challenge and an opportunity to do something different in the community. Also in Thai Research 2008, and also in Woodstock. So these are only some of the initiatives. actions that you have taken. Currently, as well as that has been approached by Somalians, traders, and intervene in their conflict with local businesses in the Middle East. Not only that, but we've also been communication with the mayor that the Durham, yes, the Zimbabwean and the local people's conflict. And tomorrow we're going to Worcester, where we're organizing a get together between the Zimbabwean people and the local South Africans, engaging in sporting activity, engaging in cultural activity as a way of creating social cohesion. The role of our peer educators is also to have organized anti-xenophobic marches in the community. Also to go to community radios and newspapers and assist migrants and refugees as well as local South Africans in understanding the state of foreign nationals, especially when we had the camp last year and in 2008. We have worked in partnership with the City of Cape Town in visiting the campsite. We've been in partnership with the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs and Foreign Affairs. A public hearing was organized in Parliament on the 50th of June in 2008. And we are back here again because as our government changes and people change as well, we are here to present ourselves again and to present still what is happening in the community. Training of refugee leaders. We were living in different camp sites last year, informing them on South Africa's mandate towards refugees and refugee rights. Currently, our programs are human rights education, orphan and vulnerable children, life skills for unemployed youth, the Songhai Saving Scheme. So as you can see from our program, this is a holistic intervention. We are looking at all levels, that of social cohesion, that of social economic growth and development, that of conflict management, and that of individual development. Our challenges that we have experienced is that lack of support from government, government not proactive on issues of xenophobia, African United services in high demand but lack of resources in order to cover all the areas as the demand continuously increases. We'd really like to spread our wings nationally, but without financial support we are not able to do that. In terms of being proactive as a government, a good example was with the outbreak of the xenophobic attacks and the camps, and how much was spent in just keeping the camps up. About millions were spent, they were spent in just feeding people and keeping people healthy and keeping people in the camps. Whereas we had put in a proposal to government of R1 million to cover our organization and our services over 3 years. So just looking at the differences is that in 3 years we could have worked in prevention and developing both local South Africans and foreign nationals, whereas money was so much money was spent just keeping foreign nationals in camp for a year. Without assistance from UGASA, Africa United cannot achieve this assistance. Yet again, we need more assistance. We need assistance from other partners, like government. Much of our services really go hand in hand. And so we have to appeal to government as well to say, look at what is already happening in our local community. Our communities have great resources that have not been realized. Though they're not financial resources, they are resources of manpower, of people's creativity, force of the earth. So, as we said, the Deputy Director is one of our partners. They're helping us in terms of sustaining our offices and our firms. And though it is of great help that they are assisting us with this, we also need other partners to learn. There are so many areas that we want to cover. We have been educated in so many different communities that we cannot sustain the office only by the assistance of the data. Other partners that we have, as I mentioned, the Nelson Mandela Foundation, the De Klerk Foundation. We have engaged on local youth dialogue that was sponsored by the De Klerk Foundation, the Council of Churches, Black Staff, Caring School Network, and also the communities in general. Thank you for your attention, and I hope this has given you a picture really of the work that we are doing in Africa Unite. This is only a glimpse of the many activities that we've done and the many impacts, the much impact that we've had on the community. And I'd really like to emphasize that it is not Africa Unite alone, but the initiative of the youth and refugees in the community.
Thank you. I tried this one. if thank you very much. I think we are echoing the same sentiment as to the good work that is being done by the members here who presented to us today. I just wanted to find out whether in your interaction with the youth, you have managed to tackle the issue of human trafficking and drug abuse, which is also accompanied by the fact that the young people are being used as drug mules or whatever. And if also there are any lessons, because you have revisited Worcester, which had a problem earlier on. So, are there any lessons that maybe you have learned? So, we will talk about the public hearings in 2008 and us as a group. Thank you very much.
of the finance, not the department of fiscal representation. It's Secretary Unite.
Okay, my question is, what measures has Africa United taken to meet the issue of do you as Africa United intend to deal with this issue? And my second question is, when it comes to the issue of training, how effective is Africa United, especially with the youth from the rural area and the youth with disabilities? Because I don't think the training of training is really good enough. I don't think it's enough. And how many women are they trained from this time?
Thank you so much. My name is Zoe. I'm a director of Africa United. I'll try to respond to some of your questions. First, I'm trying to start with the last one in terms of the training capacity. We said 20 to 25 is not enough. What we're always doing is that we like to select youth from different areas. The training is a weekend training, and we are going away. It's very expensive and costly, which costs us more or less 30 to 35,000 just for weekend. And we do have a local funder who's giving us a budget of 60,000 per year. So we can't take more than that one. So we want that the youth must be away in nice place, because we will work with them during a year, that they must be able to train others. The impact of the training is quite great. It's not only about refugees and migrants, it's about looking also in the structure of Cape Town where we are living. As you can see in this table, we have a mix. Local from Khayelitsha, from Mannenberg, from Constantia, mixing all those youth and do the work. Even our current staff of Africa United, we are just taking among our peer educators. So why? The way we work, we succeed very well, because when is the trouble in Mannenberg, when is the trouble in Masipumulele, we have our peer educators there that intervene. So why? Our impact is 100%. In Masipumulele, 2 years back, even the local minister of safety ran away from Masipumulele, but we succeed. It's through Africa United that the former premier Rasul could go to Masipumulele and celebrate. Someone asked a question of tree rent. What happened is that the young people, they look foreigners as is a conception, that the foreigners, they are living very well, and they don't look at themselves. So what we have done is that we ask them a question, why the foreigners have nothing, they came in this country, have nothing. After a period of success, what them are doing different to you? Oh, no, they're getting money from other people. We discovered that the foreigners don't get any assistance from anywhere. The foreigners are good savers. What they do, if they have 500 they want that 500 to be multiplied. The one who's telling you that he doesn't have money is wearing Levi's, is wearing shoes, nice jeans, who's costing 500. So we told them that, listen, the best way to do, let's first put three of them together as a group and even include the foreigners. Out of the same, we are made, what you are going to do, three rent. No, because the bank does not give us money. It's true, because the bank, they need a guarantee, and you cannot show the guarantee to the government, to the bank. So we said that let's put three rent together, even among foreigners, among the local people, and from there, because from 1,000, there are one rent. Even the can of Coke is more than five rent. So each person is able to save 300 per day. We start this practice in 2005 just to build a cash of saving among the youth. And from there, we reach 10,000. And what we say that the money which is being saved, the 300 is your share in the business. And you are going to identify a business. From that business, the benefit will be shared among the members. And the structure went very, very well. Until in 2008, SAMAF, which is government part of the GTI, they come in board and say, listen, they are going to support the structure. They give money, they say they are going to support us for 3 years. But they just give money for 3 months and they stop. And Africans have spent a lot of money, and we even declared dispute with SAMAF, and we have an issue which is there, which is not on the table. I don't know if you have that issue in your presentation. The issue of counter xenophobia. We at Africa Unite was called in 2006. In Pretoria, we did run a workshop with the county unit xenophobia in Home Affairs. But that unit is not working. You can't find where they're operating. They don't operate anywhere. So are all services which you are doing, it's free services, and you have more demand. We can't go and do those things. Many are peer educators, some that are student, some that are not working, and we don't have any funds to go to Worcester. We don't have a car. We need to hire a car to go to Worcester. And if you want to make a good intervention, you need to stay there until at night. So it's costing a lot of money. So the county unit of Home Affairs does not really exist by name, but really practically, you can't see them what they're doing. They're asking us the question of what is the lesson learned in Worcester. What we have learned from Worcester is that there was quite a problem of the labor issue, where they were using foreigners as a cheap labor to against the local. So, and also there was no the relation between the Zimbabwean and the local people. That it was really the business people who tried to divide it. So in December, we did a presentation to Mayor and Committee of Worcester. They like exactly what the Africans are doing, the way we do the intervention, because we work at the grassroots level. They may have agreed to form a partnership with us. As Ndombi mentioned, tomorrow they call us that we can do something, not a big thing, something very small. That's on 21st of March, which is Human Rights Day, that we can organize a friendly soccer match between the Zimbabwean and the local people, slaughter cow and eating, and that they can know each other. The thing is that people want to learn. If you see what I'm doing, and you may be able to learn from me. Not fighting with me, but learn from me, and I think that's the best way that we can support the social coalition. In terms of human rights trafficking, yes, all our peer educators that have been informed about human rights trafficking, and always when we go to run a workshop, so we raise awareness about it, and I think that we also attend a special conference on human rights trafficking, and we raise awareness about it, specifically regarding the youth who are more focused on the youth. And we also asking the Department of Social Development, especially for World Cup, we know that this will be very, very dangerous period. We have put a proposal to Social Development, and we are waiting, because in that period, where the school will be closed. So what the children are going to do in that period, especially we know the children from township for a period of a month, so it's where people will get drunk when they get, go back. So there are many things happening. We have put a proposal to the Department of Social Development that in that period, Africa United will try to raise more awareness with the parents. Those kids who don't have a parent, because we have a program, as a, in our program, orphan and vulnerable children. The program is based in Nyanga, where we cater for the children from Philippi, Guguletu, and Nyanga in that period, so that we can have some activities for the children. There was a question about the criteria. Our training, when we do a training, we advertise training through radio, community newspapers, the local newspaper, and also Bush Radio, and from there that we select all our members. We're looking also among youth from different townships. We can get maybe five from colored communities, six from black communities, foreigners, but that we're able to reach 25 or 30. It's only 2 years back we got someone from Queenstown. We hear a program on the radio. He asked, he want to attend the training, and because it was a specific request, so we could pay his transport to come here. And only himself, he did reach more than 3,000 in all the schools in Queenstown. But he wants to continue to do this, but we don't have the capacity for us to go in those areas. So we have the same request, and we don't get any funding from government. As I can say, we don't fund anything from government. City of Cape Town have spent $1 million in 2008 when they were feeding foreigners. We will put a proposal of $1 million for a period of 3 years. Up to now, we never get response from them. So someone was asking about the camp. So we is not African to put a camp. This is a government. It was just temporary measure that when the people was running from the home, that they need to be supported. So, and also they need to be fed. And the government spends $1 million for nothing, just feeding people, giving blankets. In terms of doing a presentation to other portfolio committees, so I think that this is must be good for us, that we start to marketing ourselves, that we can able to go to other portfolio committees to present this, because we are in terms of people are talking about that we are organizing workshops with some nurses about human rights. We are doing business for the youth. There are new departments for women, youth, so which we need also to do a presentation. So it's a good proposal that we also we go to those portfolio committee and we do it. What we want from this portfolio committee is that Africa United is a small organization, a small baby. It's true, we do a lot, but we are not really supported. This we want that make portfolio committee can take us new wind and open the door which we our capacity cannot do it, and I think that you can open those doors for us, that we get support from government. I don't know if I respond. Some of my people around, if they can give some input, something I left.
Yeah.
Formal code of conduct in the regulations, so it's not something that we necessarily have to set up and write up ourselves. The way we must conduct ourselves professionally, I haven't heard it in the presentation, but it's contained in the regulations that deals with honesty and fairness, advertising, compliance with the law, holding high business standards, international requirements, international requirements. We are considering how to arrest anybody. In terms of our approach to the market of home affairs and looking at some of the issues, as I mentioned, service issues and legal issues, we're not yet got that. We really believe that we have an ongoing dynamic role within the market. We have a role to play in informing us of what we need in our reaction to action. With the process and the approach that's constructed, we need to
Thank you.
specific issues, but quota work permits. You all know that every year the department limits the issues a quota list. This covers the particular professions or professional categories and the number of these professions. So the typical quota list would say electrical engineers, 1,000 for next year. Now, nobody knows how this list is run. It doesn't seem to be any scientific basis. It's supposed to be the part of the data, the UTR, and to know the things. It seems like that liaison between those departments doesn't in fact take place, but there are severe problems with it. There's no continuity, for example, between 1 year and next. So, for example, if there are 1,000 engineers required this year, and only 500 engineers come into the country, what happens to the other 500 that we need to ask? No carryover, no contribution. You really do need to get to the point. I think it's going to be done something that we have a scientific basis to say, in order for the country to need to be met, we need whatever the profession is. We need 300 doctors, 500 veterinarians, 700 anthropologists, whatever we deal with. But there has to be a scientific basis for a more systematic way of providing it. Remember that if these skills are acquired, then the process permit isn't the only way for people to come into the country. But it does create a problem if one is anywhere look for alternatives in this case, and it makes it difficult for people who do have should be in the process. We have a number of clients who we've worked with in the engineering industry who've never had any interaction with other players that we want to do or require. We, when you look at engineering and from that profession, the universities, the international academic staff from Africa and from the rest of the world, have never had any interaction with the other departments involved in the project. Another thing with the quota work permit is if you can act on a regulation to say that the person on the quota work permit does two completion as well. Now, from a practical point of view, I'm sure we've all changed jobs at some point in our lives. You might be working on one day and then skilled people that may be doing contact in Cape Town to do yoga and vice versa. Now, I'm just going to say, in terms of circumstances in the wording, in certain cases they are saying that person's service conditions have been broken because they're not continuing to be booked. And the day or two break. It might be a month or so. And we need to have clarification on that. Because technically, in certain cases, the person who does adjust to the employment becomes illegal. And if they're illegal, they're subject to deportation. And I say this because during recent years, in case, I have been to be where very, very high level scientists were served notice that they were going to be deported. So that was the implementation of the official. So clearly, there was an error in the position of the act. But that should not result in people having their rights violated for those kinds of unnecessary consequences. Well, look at work permits in general. The extension of work permits, which is not happening yet, because of modernization, and another one of the a person may change from one work permit to the other, but because those requirements are not specified, for example, if you go to Johannesburg, the main office in Johannesburg, they have a set of requirements. Thank you. business education. There are problems with commission. In many offices, it seems that unskilled doesn't have to stop. So appointments are not available. And the protocol at the moment is that the official will sit down and do with their application. So there is a point of process that is not available for many months ahead. The people are not available, they are overloaded. Time sensitive documents that are written about the week period often expire in a few six months. So a person has to obtain those documents again. Now, the maximum regulations refer to a facility for documents which could lead to the department. And I'd like to just drop in a point here about the staff of the foreign classes of therapy can sit for someone within the soul. In many cases, the department does not process these within 30 days. And this is a particularly strange situation because the courts have said that if the department takes more than 30 days, in fact, that person is granted the automatic right to live with their staff in South Africa as well as work and leave to conduct business. And the reason for this is that they have constitutional rights and obligations. And obligations obviously to support their family as well as the right to advise their family. So even though the person may not have permanent advisor, because the department has taken too long, and we're talking about somebody with a diplomat in the hand, that person may come in to work. It's an undesirable situation because effectively it's an acknowledgement that the department is not being focused on that case in time, so people will actually take up their obligation to their right. So the person will not have a permit, but the court will decide that they have their right. And it's really very much like the our experience is that we are generally not handled expeditiously. really the difficulty for the party to deal with these matters quickly and deal with them in terms of the regulations as they are written at the moment. And we've been dealing with some of the cases that could take up to 18 months, I think. So those are kind of technical issues that are available in the Act. I believe that the committee has a role in the children of the And in terms of service issues, clearly the context at the moment is that the department is going to do a really big turnaround program. But there are expectations, and those service expectations are within the criticism of the preamble. The service obviously has to be consistent from office to office. It should be consistent from office to office. We all deal with the same act and the same regulation. We don't have a situation in South Africa where each province sets up its own immigration and acts and regulations, so they're going from town to town and office to office and office to that effect. So there will be participation from the legislature or other departments. And the service should be rendered within a predictable time frame. The department has its own time frame, and that's 30 days. That's 30 calendar days, not 30 working days. That's 1 month, effectively. And then I discussed within the constitution. We have a constitution that says that the state is rendered to it, and we're going to be rendered to it as well as time to be able to do it. Specific service problems. I mentioned earlier the variation in requirements. These are two subjectives, and these should be clear from the Act and the regulation. Officials often say that the person doesn't qualify in their opinion. There is no room for opinion in the Act. Not to put the opinion on an individual counselor or even whatever, if the person applies. Because when that application is refused, there has to be a legal reason. The range of service time from office to office, and I can mention some of the offices that we can deal with the practitioners around the country. It could be anything from submitting a full complete application to maybe from 3 weeks to 6 months. Now, the service time of 30 days, clearly after 30 days, the individual applicant will need to have trouble because offers may lapse, the current terms may lapse. And there are all different issues. When you're putting them in the union situation, they need to be applied. And keeping an eye on the cost of being legal, even though the cost is fully legal. And then it if I look at certain offices, one can see that as centralized the immigration process around the area of those sources of the country, that we can often use a lot of Kestown, and Kestown has its own language application, Kestown has its own language application, so we choose on a daily basis to use a few different people and the services more quickly. And then when it comes to decision making in the department, the minister delegates the policy to the liberal, and it's incredibly important that those decision makers are available because no one else can take decisions other than those delegates to the liberal. But if they're not there, the decision simply doesn't get taken. What might seem like a minor service issue is that often people come away with incorrect endorsements. What's written on the little permit that they get put in their passport is written incorrect. And then the view of the department, if they don't hold it correct, they don't have to be corrected, but otherwise they could be found to be illegal. Now that becomes very complicated when the inspector might be back to the exit and might start the possession procedure against them. Again, we have a case where an affair is an error, and that individual could be negatively involved in the resources. I think all of those cases tend to push across the government for money, because the effect would be very important to come to the support of the government. We have many cases where foreigners come into the country of what's called Section 11-2, if the visitor's permit with permission to work should be issued at the airport with a port of entry, and it has to say Section 11-2 permission to work. Well, if they just keep, they don't pay attention, they give a visitor's permit, they can't work, so therefore the workers are going to use it. Simple example, that causes huge problems down the line. And then the fuel. All of these appeals and waivers are done at head office because this is a delegation held by the International Director of Victoria. Appeals are taking up to 12 months and sometimes longer to finalize. This is really the last resort process, and often it's resorted to where a poor decision has been made. It's an extremely long process, and bear in mind that the individual can wait in the country while they wait for that outcome, so they can wait but they can't conduct the activities while they're waiting for an outcome, for example, if it's a work permit or something. And we believe that this process is too long. One of the answers may be for the establishment of an immigration court or immigration authorities outside of how they to deal with the legal issues related to the application and the issue of the permit. Because it requires that kind of legal expertise, so I'm not sure that the department necessarily has a permit to go back into it. Now, waivers, this is where the request is directed to the Director General to waive, for example, a FACA or an adverse or anything that cannot be complied with for some reason. It's a very cumbersome process. It takes anywhere, and it's cumbersome for the department as well. It takes anywhere from 4 to 12 weeks to finalize. That some students are taught to the course of the day, and in many cases, it's used to cover for the efficiency of the current acts and regulations. So, because the acts and the regulations are not clear in the system, we've got the technical purpose of the creator to support the current effects of our students and the course of the day. There are 200 of those who are maybe not to be taught. Now, in terms of the conclusion, thank you again for the positive attitude and the need to give them feedback, and in many cases they give us feedback, and sometimes give an indication of how we could improve what we
I'm going to go to the hospital.
So, this is the problem I have. They do have contacts on the inside. Now, we know in terms of our law that any permit where the process has been circumvented or the process has been corrupted, that permit is null and void from the start. Now, that is not the industry that we're in, and we don't as practitioners participate in any of that kind of activity. In terms of our qualifications, as I said, the major qualifications. Obviously, in our own meetings, we indicate to our members that these are our standards and our ethics and the code of conduct, which I read from the Geneva Regulation a little bit earlier, specifies how we are to conduct ourselves. And those are quite clear and quite thorough. I suppose, yes, you're correct, that if there is a level of corruption and inefficiency, there's always an opportunity. But that's not, again, the market and the way in which you operate. Advise people who would like a practitioner to assist them in the process. They may not be in the country at the time, or a corporation, company, for example, that's bringing in large numbers of staff and wants to look at options. It's not something you can easily establish at the counter at the Department of Home Affairs, and in fact, it's questionable as to whether Home Affairs should play advisor, judge, adjudicator, executioner, and the whole process, because there are always options in immigration. Some which you need to present as evidence, some which does, some which are short term, some which are long term. So it is a legal, set of legal options which we advise companies and individuals on in terms of their best option, the best permit that they would need for their purposes. Ultimately, when one looks at the solution, and this is not the part of the land, because attacks due to Tango. Wherever there's corruption, there's somebody perpetrating the corruption and there's an official involved. But ultimately, if the department screens out people who are not entitled to act firstly, and who are acting unethically, then that person has no business anymore. That person has no opportunity. And that is where I believe the committee could help us prevent these kinds of issues and problems arising. If you have a regulated situation where practitioners have to be identified, and in terms of the physical layout and access to Home Affairs offices, there must be secure areas where practitioners or more agents can't go in and negotiate and deal with deals under the table. If you're at the counter, you're submitting a complete application, you're paying your fees, not cash under the table or extras or anything like that, there can be no corruption. And particularly where officials just do not entertain applications for favoritism or what do you want to call it, lunch money, extra money, I don't know if you want to call it, but the extra unofficial fee, that has to be regulated by the custodian or the manager of the hospital is going to care. I can tell you of an incident when I was in one of our regional offices, maybe I mustn't name it, that I walked past during the lunch break when the staff were not there, and I walked past the back entrance of the Home Affairs office, and I saw people coming and going. Now, this is entirely irregular. And there was a staff member getting people in and out, and you have to ask for what purpose. I actually made a joke of it, and I spoke to the person. I said, what's going on? And she waved me away and said, oh, don't worry, these are the people I deal with for that. And this back entrance is very far from the front end. And that tells you in certain offices, just one individual who plays their own little game or runs their own little, whatever you want to call it, their own little business on the side, can corrupt the whole process. That's an attitude to them that we just support it. If an official asks for something that they're entitled to ask for, or we pick up something that's happening in a particular office, people flip the queue and they go and get something they shouldn't get, we just say, that's what we saw, and then the head of office, as the manager of those staff, or head office, in fact, in Pretoria, must deal with it. And I must say that as we've reported these issues and incidents at certain offices, which I wouldn't like to name them, but I might find myself in some trouble, but it's a liable issue. Say something in it, also with me. At certain offices, we've had specific incidents. My staff have been approached and said, this is how we do it in place which is unnamed. And I put that person's name and I reported to the DG, and the DG looked at them and said, that's a fire. That's our stance from this particular issue. There is no space for it, and we don't want to attract that kind of business, and we don't want to get involved with corruption in the process. So,
very important issue is
ongoing targeted corruption. And you don't have to visit 10 Home Affairs offices to see what's going on. I mean, you can visit one or two, specifically where people's rights aren't seen. I mean, there are several issues that I would also like to be known at the Ministry of Education with regard to what happens with nations, where people aren't got stamps, if you don't have a stamp, you don't think it's easy to receive. And the only way you can get a stamp on your arm is if you pay money. And basically, and I've said this before, security personnel are running some of those offices. And I'm sure they would admit that you've got to take a chance and you've got to have it.
Thank you, Honorable Blanche. I would like to avail the opportunity to members and servants to be directly engaged with this presentation.
As far as the fee, we also have to me, the government is wonderful, and it is good that on page 40 we have specific issues that of consent from you as a forum. And what I want you to suggest was the same as the what the Minister of Land said, that maybe we should thank and check the presentation that we have today, then have time to sit and look through, because some of these and we have to actually go in and make sure that what we talk about here is actually going to be this time when we come into the city and then we have to.
Thank you, Honorable.
No, Chair, I think we are going to be repeating the same thing.
Can you go to the event
gentleman
again?
Oh,
no. There's no harm.
say, I think you will be repeating the same things, because I have here a copy of a general work permit and a general work permit for a semi-skilled person. But the way it is so cumbersome for the application, of course, they've highlighted the amount that should be a bank guarantee and the valid return ticket and all those things, but they've even highlighted the fact that this person, semi-skilled one, must even go through the contract employment and the proof of qualifications evaluated by SATA, just as Mr. Leon said. It is very, very, very difficult for anyone to really get help from the Home Affairs. It doesn't matter. They need a letter of employment contract, and you submit that, and the time expires, and you don't know what's going to happen to that poor person. We think we have an opportunity here, and maybe we should have cases where we really ourselves must try and put them to the Home Affairs and see how we can sort out the problem. Otherwise, I really would like to thank the presenter.
In that context, we need to engage in this issue.
Fortunately, each and every meeting that we do, they are always represented from the ministry, from the department, who are able to flag and let the minister department about issues that were raised before the committee. While we do not see them yet, officials of the ministry are the parliamentary officers. My side, as I said earlier, we raise the issues of the relevance of the consciousness of the party. And from your side, we have to continue knocking on the door and engaging with the people that are here. So you see that in future, we have meetings where we're doing by the stakeholders to come in. And even if you as stakeholders will be granted the opportunity to engage where the department makes the presentation, other stakeholders make the presentation, then we are able to help and benefit from the diversity of views in regard to the areas that is our responsibility, namely overfed. After that sermon of the month, I would like to thank all stakeholders. We are not in front of you for my management and indulge you and enable us all to be equipped by the answer to your follow up question.
In the part of the question around fees, the regulation fees, the position of the government is that the code of conduct only refers to fair and just fees. It doesn't refer to specific fees. And then when we look at fees, we look at two types of fees. One is the fee which has to be paid to the department, or an application fee, only 425 or 1520, depending on the application. And then there are repatriation guarantees, which is the amount that you have to pay the department once your permit is granted. It's money that sits with the department and if you misbehave, then that's what they use to take you home, to deport you. Then the professional fees, I think, is what you are referring to. And really, how long is the fee to check? I suppose anywhere in the country, you could have a study permit done for 1 or 2,000 rand. You also have it done for 10,000. I think everybody who's having it done for 10,000 and the example you mentioned, it's probably being ripped off a little bit because it doesn't involve that much work from a practitioner. And really, in the market, you have a range of practitioners, you have boutique lawyers, boutique attorneys, you do it at a very high expensive level, and you even have advocates who do the integration. I won't tell you who the most expensive ones are, but this is really a matter of the individual shopping around for the best price and the best quality of service. I can't give you a more concise answer than that.
Thanks. I'm not going to think I should further. What I'd like to say, the example that has been used, and I take consideration of the example that was put forward by the production, 10,000 individual might be worth of. But moving ahead, it will be important for us to get the case across the industry and who has been charged. Whether you speak about the chief lawyers or whoever, there should be a common thing. It can't be everybody must go around shopping, so there should be a standard. I did say that we'll continue and